of you seeking perfection. Oh Lord, it's been a long, long way to go. All you need is a bit of reflection. Just might seem like changing direction right now. Don't go around taking up no collection on a way down. There's nobody left to crown. What if politicians were all good guys? Oh Lord, don't we wish they were? Wouldn't I be so dependent? God, so Lord, make us all feel like dependent sometimes. If we want freedom, we've got to amend it. On our way down, there's nobody left to crown.
The great folk singer Richie Havens with Nobody Left to Crown. Ain't that the truth? It's from his acclaimed 1999 album, Time. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today we're going to get a bit historical. Not hysterical, but historical. And we're going to talk about what is the purpose of history? And more particularly, what is the purpose of African or Black history? And the question, I think, is a legitimate one, because all along the way, we get all these signals that we don't quite know what it is. Is it that we pause once a month, the month of February, we pause in the month of February, and we get very African in our orientation, and we quote the right people, and we say the right things? Or is it something much bigger than that? When Carter G. Woodson, the famed historian, established this idea of a special time to set aside and revisit those things that are important, especially to a people who, by almost all accounts, were treated very differently from everybody else in the world. And he reasoned that perhaps a history, some kind of an account pertaining to a shared history, would be one of the best ways to galvanize our efforts and to galvanize us, period, to bring us all together. Has it been working? Do you share that vision of Carter G. Woodson? Do you see how vital it is? Or is it, you know, passé by now, in your view? So I want some brave souls, because we're going to be talking about history. What is it? What is it supposed to do? And how do we know that the history that we have, or the histories that we have, are authentic and correct and accurate? What do we believe about who we are? Is that the role of history, to tell us who we are? Is the role of history to shape our worldview? Is it simply to record events in sequential order or maybe just to extract from all the things that we experience a particular thing or a group of things. How does it work? And who determines its value? Simple questions. These are very simple questions. Of course, I'm joking. They're not simple questions. They sound simple enough, but these are complex questions. And they are particularly important in a racially and in so many other ways bifurcated world, so that we have competing histories. Whom do we believe? Is it important whether we believe anybody? What do you do with this information? How do we get it? How is it obtained and then put into general circulation? How is it used by any society today? Where do you get it from? And of course, we live in a world that is very sensitive to things like marketing, like sales, profits. How does that enter the picture? How does that befoul the original intent, which is to have available to us knowledge that we can trust? So history isn't a simple thing. And depending on what side of the line you're on, are you a member of the conquerors? Are you a member of the conquered? History means something very different again. So it's a very complex thing. And why, therefore, do we seek always to arrive at a point where we have homogeneity in history? It's an across-the-board kind of thing. I may even suggest that there's an undercurrent. People are saying, you know, we should just have one history. And any history that speaks to any particular group for any particular reason is a history intended to further fragment our society. We should just have one history. Is that even a logical argument? And since we don't tell historians what to do, what to write, how then are we to regard the byproducts of their work? We just accept it? Who decides whether that history, that historical record, is real and accurate and fair? Yeah, it's going to be a bunch of simple questions we're asking today. And I'm interested in your reaction because I think we have gone just past the point on many of these questions that we should be asking, and for particular reasons. So how do you consume history? What is your attitude toward it? What is history doing for you? Should it actually do anything, or should it just be available? This is available knowledge. And life goes on. Is history a thing to be animated? Is history a thing that is bound up in very nice-looking books, leather covers and whatnot, and they look so impressive on the shelf? Is history sometimes a declaration of war against injustice? Is history part of a propaganda machine to assuage the people, to keep them nice and calm, to guide their focus to a particular place or a particular time with the intent of having a particular impact and outcome? So I'm asking you, because we all are consumers of history, every day we read the newspaper, by tomorrow it's history, by an hour afterwards it's history. We're surrounded by history all the time. How do we use history? What is it for? How do you deploy the knowledge that you gain by reading history, learning history? Who makes it? Who manufactures history? Which history is to be more powerful than another history? And who decides that? How does that happen? That one kind of history is far more prevalent, far more available, far more highly regarded as somebody else's history. What are the factors involved in that? So your thoughts at 888-874-4888. I raise these questions because, first of all, we should be thinking of these things. Because I think we will see, hopefully this will arise during the course of our conversation today, I think we will see multiple dimensions of history and how it is used. Who creates it? Who consumes it? What is the power relationship between and among those producing history and those consuming history? And such thoughts. Let's give some thought to these things today. Why? Because this is perhaps, I think, one of the most potent discussions that we could ever have. Because I think when we start talking about it, I see your reticence about it. Don't be afraid. Just chime in. And I will prod you and poke you a little bit just to get expressed your ideas about it. There's no right or wrong or anything like that. But there are certainly challenging questions about this thing called history. And we don't ask them. We don't ask these questions at all. First of all, I don't think we believe ourselves to be authoritative enough or well-versed enough in this thing called history to question history as it is written, as it is manufactured and presented. I think we're intimidated by that. These people who are writing these books and historical accounts and so forth, they're putting in a lot of time and effort in their work. Obviously, the work is good. But then I know deep in your gut, you have a feeling perhaps like Carter G. Woodson. There's something that makes you uneasy about historical records and history generally. Then why? Why is it necessary for, let's say, why is it logical even that a Japanese historian is given far more weight about Japanese history than somebody from Lithuania? If history is just the objective evaluation of the facts, why do we have so much confusion? Why do we have all these interpretations and we have big fights about the historical record? If, in fact, history is a discipline that presents, or one would think, a methodology that would produce facts that would apply no matter who presents the information. But is that so? It's not so. We have widely varying interpretations of history. And we have widely varying applications of history. Some history is used to raise a nation with a predictable and predicted sense of identity and pride. It may not have a thing to do with the facts. But it has a great deal to do with the use of, quote, history, unquote, to forge identities. That may have nothing to do with the facts. So where does that leave you, and where does that leave me? Where does that leave us all in this matter of history? Let's start with Ali from New York. You're on the air.
Hi, my professor. How are you doing?
Hey, I keep telling you, you have this thing all wrong.
But you are asking the question, and only the professors usually ask the question, and we have to give them their answers.
Let me ask each other the questions. That's great. So what are your thoughts about this thing about history today?
Okay. One of the things is that history to me is memory. And then if you talk about memory, then you're talking about our elders and what people remember that they could, you know, you could just write down. And also it's about traveling. When you read information, a lot of time people travel to prove that information that it came from certain part of the world is true. Another thing is the Bible. The Bible gives you different names, you know, Luke, John. Like me personally, I do have problem with the Bible because a lot of people present this as fact. And we, all of us, I think, we are not 100% sure about why these men.
But yeah, Ali, let me go to your first point. There are many, many historical records and documents and so forth that have been interpreted without having to interview anybody. They, you know, the history is produced out of records, not with out of interviews with people. So how do you regard history that isn't produced out of traveling and talking to people, but just simply zeroing in on history might come from, as in the Greeks and Romans, they interpret even things painted on the wall. They're not talking to anybody. They don't have to, but they can still produce a credible record. So what do you do when you do not have the access to people of a particular time that you're covering? We don't have access to people living in the world 2,000, 5,000 years ago, but yet we have histories about them. How do you figure that?
Well, in the case that you're talking about painting and things that we have found in caves, and for the most part, you know, the history is the interpretation that we as individual put to those paintings. And we try to come up with the stories from those paintings, especially in caves and painting that we are finding. Like now, they're going to open one of Michelangelo, and the Italian are trying to interpret it. Who has painted those paintings, Michelangelo or somebody else? So it's always the interpretation of all the people that we have, that we're going to be using, and our own interpretation. Because if I see a painting and I wanted to give interpretation, that's why you have people doing the interpretation of the painting. But I think as you as an individual, me as an individual, I might have a different interpretation, but I will also be guided by what I heard from before.
Okay, but then we have a lot of people that we should have heard from before, but they're dead. They're not talking to anybody. How do we arrive at a historical record that you think would be authentic and a record you can trust?
Well, experiments. The experimentation and putting different books written on the same subject together and trying to compare and see if they come up to the same conclusion.
Okay.
That's one way I would. I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
You got us started today. I want to thank you.
Okay.
Let's see how people react to what you put on the table here.
Okay. Thank Willie you.
From Brooklyn, bye-bye. You're on the air. Willie, you're on the air. Okay, we don't have Willie. 888-874-4888. You know, we're talking really about a very heavy issue. It doesn't sound like it, but it is. Because in the end, in any given society where people have all these differentiated roles, one of the roles would be the people who keep the record, the people who produce the record, the people who document our existence in a capsule of time. We trust that they're doing the right thing. We trust that they're fully involved in ascertaining the truth of things. But then the question is, what is the truth? Look at American history, where we have so many interpretations of the same thing, the same event, the same location, the same action. All these different views, what do you think shapes all of that? And as a consumer of that kind of information with so many different pieces and components to it that appear to be conflicting, where does that put you as the person looking for information and history that eventually somehow will shape your attitudes about things? A good example would be the issue of slavery. But I don't want to give too much away. Let's see what people come up with. Travis from Buffalo, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How you doing?
Okay. How about you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Can't complain. Just my take on the whole thing. I think history is a system within itself, because I know, you know, we like to talk about systems, or you like to talk about systems and how important they are. And I think that history, you know, within itself is a system. It can be a system of empowerment. It can be, as we've seen, you know, it can be used as a system of control. And, you know, Dr. Clark tells us history is a measuring stick about where it tells you where you are, you know, where you were and where you need to be. So that's pretty much my understanding of what history is.
How do you, with this understanding, how do you navigate all these different forms of history that ostensibly relate to the same thing, but have entirely different interpretations? How do you do it?
Well, like I think Ali said, you have to cross-check, and it's very tedious, and a lot of people don't want to take the time. They rather have somebody else do it and get the information from them. But from a personal standpoint, you have to cross-check. You have to be diligent in your search for history and in your search for truth and in your search for answers, because we see how easily it has been corrupted by the power structure and the powers that be. So from a personal standpoint, you have to, you know, take everything in, but have a pretty good filter, because you don't want to, because I was watching YouTube of you the other day, and you were talking about reading between the lines and how sometimes you can get overloaded information and not really be able to sift through. But if you want to get the answers and you want to, you know, really find an understanding for yourself, I think it's best that you cross-check, and it's a never-ending journey from the cradle to the grave.
Jeez, Travis. That's one heck of an assignment. Let me ask you.
Yeah.
Could you tell us how, just in your own way, how you navigate this idea of what history is to you? Never mind anybody else, but to you, what history is, and how you define it, and how you can tell whether the source that you are dealing with or getting information from is valid and authentic?
real sad question. So history for me personally, like I said, it's just something, it's information, and it's something that I feel that can be used to make me a better person, and also, you know, better the world that I live in and the people around me. I've rejected, or, you know, over the past few years, I've rejected all the history that I've learned in school, and I've pretty much, I don't want to say, oh, I hope it doesn't, you know, look like I threw the baby out with the bathwater, but I've rejected everything that I've been taught. I had to re-educate myself on just simple things as words and definitions and how they apply and, you know, the etymology of things. So you just, for me, I just have to go back as far as I can and try to, you know, go through it and catch up to today.
Well, Travis, you know what you just said is that you have to have a present mind. Your mind ought to be working as you consume this thing called history,
right?
Because it could be something else. Not history, but something else.
Right.
What might
right.
it
like I said,
be if it's something else?
I think it could be a tool of control, a tool of destruction, a tool of, you know, disenfranchisement. Because, I mean, as an African-American or as a black person, I mean, you know, we are we should pride ourselves on the knowledge of self. And that's who we were, who we are, like I said, and who we need to be. And history has been so corrupted. It has been so distorted that, you know, a lot of people are running around like chickens with their head cut off. A brother of mine tells me, like, you have a glass, a mirror, and you shatter the glass on the floor, and one person picks up a little piece of that glass and think they have history or think they have truth, when in all reality, you have to put all the pieces together and really look at and see what is to be taken and what is good for you and what needs to be used.
Well, you're saying something else. I mean, I don't know if you are intending to do this, but I get from you that history, there are different kinds of history with different purposes.
Yes.
And for someone seeking information, say like you or Ali, you have to start from the point of view that that's all it is. You're looking for information and aware that along the way, you may not necessarily get what you're looking for, or that the information that you get may not itself be accurate. It may not itself hit the mark. So, I mean, we all can't be historians as consumers of history. We have a point of view, a point of reference about it. So, are you conscious when you get, I didn't finish the sentence with conscious, but are you conscious in your search for, with the historical record, are you conscious of yourself as either an empowered person or a person looking to fill in some gaps?
Wow. Okay, so I would say I am not fully conscious of myself, you know, but that is something I am in search of. And like you said, I will encounter things along the way that may not be what I'm looking for, and I would just have to use, you know, it would just be information, you know, whether it be useful or not. Uh-huh. But I can't say that I am fully conscious of myself, but I am definitely in pursuit of consciousness of myself and who I am and my relation to, you know, the world, I guess, at large. And that's just, you know, from my ancestors to, you know, to my parents to me. I think that all plays a part into my consciousness or consciousness as a human being.
Wow. Well, you've taught us quite a bit today in this short time, and I'm very proud that you have it. I'm sorry?
No, I said that you're the professor. I want to just tell you, man, I really, like, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate, you know, everything that you do and the information that you put forth. You are like X-ray vision goggles for us. Like, we have 20/20 vision, but once we listen to you, like, we get a deeper insight and understanding, and it's just so thought-provoking. So I just want to say thank you, and, you know, you are appreciated all the way up here in Buffalo.
Hey, thanks so much. It is very warm in Buffalo from my perspective. Thank you so very much.
All right.
Thank you. Well, what we're getting at here is how people relate to information with the consciousness that is operative as you seek information. You may not be totally aware of it, but you have some kind of hint that you are about to interact with something, a body of information, as an oppressed person. You are interacting with a body of information as a member of the conquerors. It's a very interesting thing. And that is why people automatically gravitate to certain kinds of history. They want to know what happens. But in the present moment that they're seeking the information, there's a consciousness as to why they want to know and what they want to know. It may not be crystal clear, but over time, you see yourself reacting to history this way. And it is the same for historians. I happen to have had the honor and privilege of knowing personally many, many great historians. And to a person, I mean, we never did get into this discussion, but even for them, there was history and then there was history. They had no real interest in the history of conquerors, except to bring light to the history of the conquered, if that makes sense. So as historians, they differed in mentality completely from your basic average historian. They were invested in the work. They had a mission. And it was fertile soil for many of them because the work that they did, nobody else did or had done. Who really cared to write a history, for example, of the Haitian Revolution? Which basic average historian, deeply committed to just writing history, nonetheless sought to put the record straight on the Haitian Revolution? That was not part of the thinking, because the historians, for the most part, took sides, and they sided with the conquerors. So we people who are descended of people who were conquered in one way or the other, and also there's a history of great accomplishment that also went unreported, unresearched. So I'm saying this is a very interesting thread that holds the historian and the person seeking an explanation of history. We are together in this. And that is why in this month of Black history, it is very, very, very important to recognize that this is where we have something in common. The historians themselves were on a mission to bring to light a lot of our history that we had no clue about, or very little information. But having that information filled us out. It filled us out a great deal. And so we now look at the world very differently. We're now looking at the world as empowered people, empowered by a past brought to us by historians conscious of their mission and their work. This is not to say that these historians, you know, are just everything Black is beautiful. Not at all. I've had many interviews, as you know, with Gerald Horn, Professor Gerald Horn, who's always writing. But when you see this kind of historian, and we have them, and we are very, very lucky to have them, you see how fully invested they are in revelation of facts. Eric Williams was one such historian. I taught a course some years ago, based on his book, Capitalism and Slavery, and From Columbus to Castro. Incredible mind, but you see evidence of a historian making the effort to make these revelations so that people truly understand a thing called slavery. It is a definitive work. And that is what this month should mean to all of us. that it gives us incentive to revisit or to visit for the first time some things that we never regarded as being so vitally important to us. And yet they are at the very center of our identity, at the very center of our anger, at the very center of our actions. We probably have never quantified it this way. Why do we need this knowledge? Why should we seek this knowledge? And it is because people have put in our path the tools, in some ways, you could call it, to self-governance and self-liberation. No British historian that, the run-of-the-mill British historian would interpret slavery in the Caribbean in the same way. The historical record of slavery in the South by your average American historian does not resemble in any way what really happened. And so we have the historians themselves coming straight to the point, but from an entirely different point of view. If you read, go back to Gerald Horne, his book on 1776, which was mind-blowing, in which he meticulously tears apart the popular notion, i.e. propaganda, about 1776, American independence, and placed within proper context and within our own historical memory, we see it for what it is. That slaves literally forced the hand of the so-called founding fathers by threatening to ally themselves with the British. So this business of independence was really not one of those glorious flag-waving events. It was brutal. And it was also about people looking tactically at a situation, not for themselves. They were thinking hundreds of years down the line. And that's the beauty of Black history. Now, we do have quite a few instances in which the so-called history produced by Black historians is really shameful. It's simplistic. It really doesn't reflect serious commitment to research. The historians I have known, every available penny, every available minute, that's what they did. Research. And across the board research, because they were constantly gauging the angles from where, of how they saw things with where things were constantly being distorted and reported that way. So, I'm urging that in this month, everybody, not just Black folks, everybody, because history is an everybody thing. We all ought to know the truth. We all ought to appreciate the full dimensions of the historical record. And this is a major crime in the United States, beyond it too. Coming out of the Caribbean, as I do, You would be amazed at the level of distortion that still psychologically hampers a lot of people from just being normal, their normal, empowered selves. Because the role of history was to create a psychologically disabled person, disabled for generations. You're teaching yourself the wrong thing, and then you teach your children the wrong thing, and they teach their children the wrong thing, so that this system, deliberately designed to hobble the majority of people by giving them false information, which is described as history. But we do have people, and this includes radical whites. I want to really mention that. Because while it is largely a white versus other people's thing, we have white historians. I talk about Theodore Allen quite a lot. Theodore Allen, the author of The Invention of the White Race, a work that does so much, and he doesn't let up. He's very simple, straightforward. But he completely destroys this idea about white supremacy. And he meticulously, he actually uses with precision the exact period in history, the exact time when this notion of whiteness was invented as a means of social and economic control. Brave work. Excellent work. So, as we continue this journey on this month, and I think, you know, we do have to look at other some people who are just wasting our time, but they're wasting their time too. They're not in this to produce a record of authenticity and accuracy. They just want to churn out a fast book, and you can tell this from page one. Sometimes you don't even have to open the book, just the way the book looks. You can tell this is a person who has no respect for the role of retrieving the missing pages of our history. We must reject these people. We must reject that. But we also must develop a sense of how of claiming the history that tells us something more and more about ourselves and our journey in this world. It's a fascinating thing. And I encourage you, in whichever ways you can do it, I encourage you to take a look at it. I remembered interviewing, her name slips me, a white woman actually, many years ago, who really opened my eyes about rice. She happened to be a culinary historian. Wrote for the New York Times and did blah, blah, blah. But she was a genuine culinary historian. And when she talked about the importance of rice in the world, the agricultural importance of rice, she blew my mind. Because she explained in large measure how it was important to pursue slaves with the technology of growing rice which at the time, the United States was the largest exporter of rice. We never thought about that. But particular African nations where people had advanced technologies, they looked simple, but they were quite advanced in flooding fields, regulating water flows, and so forth, and developing different strains of rice. All that was done under the tutelage, if you will, of enslaved people, enslaved Africans. And that one thing blew my mind, so that when I went to the South, Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, and I see still to this day how vital rice agriculture is to the United States, all these hundreds of years later, that woman opened my eyes. All the years before, she opened my eyes. So I'm saying that it may not look like history, but it is. We had these people with advanced technology, advanced agricultural skills, and for their skills, they were hunted down, because they were so vital to this burgeoning, or what could have been, in the eyes of their conquerors, they could have been the basis for a brisk, a robust agricultural system. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice. I hope all is well, and good afternoon to the PRN family. You ask a question about history, and I always refer to John Henry Clark, who says that history is a current event and that it is always simultaneously the past, the present, and the future exist simultaneously. And something interesting happened this morning. As you know, I've shared with you that I'm a midwife, and the what we refer to as the current midwifery profession actually came out of the backs of the grand midwives of the South. And so, you know, there are all kinds of history, and one of the challenges that I have had in my professional organization is to make certain that everyone understands that our profession was born on the backs of indigenous midwives, la curanderas, the grand midwives of the South, because the students who are being educated today think that midwifery started in the hills of Kentucky with this white woman by the name of Mary Breckinridge. And so just this morning, I was writing an article for our journal, and many of us contribute pieces, and two separate individuals used the word developing world. We were talking about maternal mortality and how maternal mortality throughout you know, Africa and the Caribbean, and mainly countries and of color, that everybody refers to as the developing world, and they're very comfortable, and everybody uses the word developing world. So I emailed them back, and I said, you know, we really have to begin to utilize language that is not demeaning, that is not hurtful, and implies that we are backwards. And I gave the example of cell phones. Very few people can live without their cell phones today, except that cell phones need an element called cadmium. And without cadmium, nobody has a cell phone. The only problem is the only place in the world where cadmium exists is in the Central African Republic in Central Africa. And without that cadmium that Apple and Samsung now controls, nobody has a cell phone. And as you're talking about electric cars and Elon Musk, again, those batteries can't work without lithium. And the only place that lithium exists is in Africa. And so I had to share with them, because that's history. People don't think of things like that as history. But that's history. And those of us who have that information, you have to be able to not only have the information, but be able to process it and then educate everyone in your immediate environment. And so I emailed them back and I said, you know, you both of you use these terms in your columns. You really, and I gave them the examples. And I said, the only issue with these countries is that they don't have the expertise to get it out of their ground so that they can control their resources. So don't refer to them as developing. They've got resources. They're resource rich. They just can't get it out of the ground. And so there are all different kinds of history. You have political history. You've got medical history, all different kinds of history. But the thing is, you've got to be able to link everything together. Because it's all linked.
It certainly is. Amen to that. Well, it looks like that brings us to the end of our program today, but not to the end of our discussion. I see quite a few people queued up, and I'm sure they have very important things to say and contribute, and we should hear them. So we'll continue this tomorrow. But I want us to just inculcate a new attitude about this thing called Black history and history generally, and link it to our current conditions. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening today. Bye. Better correction right now. Just my dream.